Yeah.
Okay. I have a meet Friday, Wednesday, and I have this Thursday.
Good morning. Hi, everyone. I'm Tara Saylor. I'm a member of your outreach committee. I am so pleased to welcome Dr. Laura Garrett to speak with us today from the Alzheimer's Association. This is our generosity recipient for the month of February, and it's a topic very near and dear to my heart. My mother has Alzheimer's, and my mother-in-law also has Alzheimer's. So we're really grateful for her work. Dr. Laura has a doctorate of education in family studies and child development from Oklahoma State University with a graduate certificate in gerontology. She holds a master's of human relations from the University of Oklahoma and a bachelor in consumer affairs with a secondary major in gerontology from Kansas State University. She's also a certified dementia practitioner. She's a professor of psychology at Tulsa Community College and a community educator for the Alzheimer's Association. Laura is a third-generation Rotary member. I don't know how,
Rotarian.
And has been a member of the Rotary since 1999. She serves as the team captain for the Rotarians of District 6110 and the community college team for the Tulsa Alzheimer's Walk. She has two children. Her daughter, Sarah, is a graduate student at Washington State, and her son, Rob, is studying abroad in Florence as a University of California student. So let's welcome Dr. Laura.
I love she picked up the Dr. Laura thing. That's I'm not that Dr. Laura, but it's fun to have that. I always, when I'm introduced, you know, and I'm in a group up, and I'm up front, they say OSU, and I, you know, do this, and OU, number one. And then I'm lost kind of by K-State, but I went to a football game this last season, and apparently they do this. Did you all know this? This is Wildcat. Wildcat. So I learned a new gesture at the K-State game, and a good one, I guess. First, I want to thank you very much for contributing to the Alzheimer's Association this month. We are doing amazing work. I just got back from New Orleans, where we are now talking about the era of treatment. I've been in this business almost 25 years, and we have never talked about treatment. I mean, you know, there's been a few things out there, but for the most part, we now have medications that in the early stages of Alzheimer's are reducing or eliminating amyloid protein. And that is huge. That's the big thing we talk about in the world of Alzheimer's is amyloid protein. So that's changed my whole perspective on presenting and talking about Alzheimer's. And I'll get into that at the end. I don't want to be rude and watch my watch, but I'm very cognizant of the time for you all. And so I want to make sure that I stick to my target timing. And I'd love to have a discussion at the end, questions, conversation, as we talk about these kinds of things. My favorite presentation that perhaps maybe someday I can come back and do is about successful aging, because that's the other thing we need to talk about when we talk about dementia is that there's some really good research out there about lifestyle changes that you and I could make today that may have impact on the likelihood or the severity of Alzheimer's disease on the family. So that's really important. I appreciate your filling out the form for me. We will not bug you if you don't want to be bugged. That's not what that's all about. It's simply to prove to our funders and legislators what our impact is. So the most important part of that form is your name and your zip code, and anything else you choose to give is icing on the cake if you want to be involved. As I was saying, I really am not a PowerPoint person, and I'm just realizing I can't see it unless I do this. So we won't stick too heavily to it, but it does keep me on target. My college students know they can take me off on a tangent in a minute, and I go off on these little exercises in excitement, which makes it difficult for me to stay on target. So the PowerPoint is almost more for me than you. There are videos embedded inside it, and so it may be a little awkward for me to get past it. So you may hear a little glitch of video, and I apologize for that. This is the national training PowerPoint, and we use it with our volunteers who are kind of new at the gig to help them make sure they get on time. So I always say PowerPoints aren't either power or point. And so as a result, I just use them to keep me posted. See how it goes. I'm not even sure where I'm supposed to. I should have asked where to point. Oh, there you go. Yeah, we're going to talk about Alzheimer's and dementia. Can you all hear me okay? I'm not right at the mic. Okay. Recognize what it's all about. Talk about risk factors, stages, the FDA-approved treatments, which is huge. Again, when I was in San Diego the year before for the same conference, we did not have either FDA approvals for some of these medications, nor was Medicare covering it. And in less than a year, thanks to funding like you all have given us, we have gotten both FDA approval and Medicare covering some of these diseases. Now, I don't want to act like it's over because there's a lot still left to do. And it is not a cure. We do not have a cure. I was on a call with a neurologist not too long ago who specializes in dementia, who said within our lifetimes we will see a cure. I love to hear that, but I'm also somewhat hesitant to give families that much hope until I see it in action, and then I will be as much a believer as the rest of them. Oh, it went so well, and now, oh, there we go. I'm not going to test your knowledge. Six million Americans living with Alzheimer's disease. I feel the need, and I think we're going to get to it in the slide, to explain Alzheimer's disease, because dementia is the big umbrella. And there's lots of different kinds of dementia under the big umbrella, but Alzheimer's is the most frequent, the most common, and has the most impact, I think, on the community. So that's why we call ourselves the Alzheimer's Association, when in fact, really, we should call ourselves the Dementia Association, because we serve all forms of dementia in our programming and our care groups and all the kind of things that we do along the way. So Lewy bodies, which you've heard about, that's what Robin Williams had. You've heard about Bruce Willis, which was interesting because, you know, first aphasia came out, and those of us in the field said dementia. Aphasia, as you know, some of you may have had family members who have strokes, and we talk about aphasia and strokes. It's all about language. And that's not really what Bruce Willis has. Now, I think he's been diagnosed with frontal temporal, which is different than Alzheimer's disease in general. And again, before the era of treatment, I used to say, don't get too hung up in all that. Because for the most part, I mean, don't you know, Americans love a good diagnosis, right? We all want a category to fit in. And if that's helpful, great. But for the most part, my answer is we need to help you with the symptoms, the treatment, the living with the disease part, and the fact that it's frontal temporal versus Alzheimer's for most of us doesn't make a difference. But now in the era of treatment, we probably want to get a diagnosis. And by the way, you watch me go off track already, there's a blood test that's coming. So just like there's a blood test for your propensity for breast cancer, there's a blood test that's going to be down the line to tell you whether or not you have a propensity toward Alzheimer's. That's something we may want to talk about at the end, because I have hesitation about that both ways. So over 11 million Americans provide unpaid care. Their caregivers not being reimbursed in any way, shape, or form. Your husbands, your wives, your children, your siblings are all taking care of that. And of course, for me, it's the emotional and financial importance of the family. But when we talk about that in the realm of funding, we were just in a congressman's office 2 days ago talking about funding because employers are impacted by this, healthcare providers are impacted by this, I'll have families come to me and say, I want to see a neurologist, and it's a one-year wait for the neurologist I have. That's astronomically unacceptable, in my opinion. But what we can do about that is somewhat limited, right? I'd have no magic wands to fix most of the things that we're dealing with here. I didn't create this because although I'm a professor, I don't like to quiz people. It is not a part of the normal aging process. We hear that all the time. Again, in our lifetimes, probably when we were children, you heard people say, well, senility has come to pass, right? Or, that person is older. It is not an inevitable part of the aging process. And you've seen people, the Betty Whites of the world, the George Burns of the world, who live into their hundreds and have great cognitive ability. So why is it considered an aging disease? Because age is the biggest correlate. So the older that you get, the more likely you are to get it. And I'll tell you, the number one question that I get asked when I do presentations is, I think I have Alzheimer's disease. And I always have to kind of give it a smile because I have a group of friends, girlfriends. We went to college together. We keep track of each other. We're getting really close to the 60 mark. And they'll tell me, I think my mind is diminishing. And I'm like, do you all remember when we were in our 20s and we thought we had baby brain, right? And do you remember when we were in our 40s and we thought we had, So a lot of that is confirmation bias. It's the idea that, oh my gosh, I literally have put the milk in the cabinet once. Anybody? Right? I have found my keys in the refrigerator. I have a lot going. But I don't have dementia, and one of the reasons we know that is because I know what the keys are for. You see the difference? So what we look at, and when we look at anybody in aging, is we look at the commonalities of their activities of daily living. Whenever I go to a support group or a care plan meeting, some of y'all have been in those deals, right, where you've been discharged from the hospital or your mom's moving different levels of care, and they'll say, we're going to have a care plan meeting. They're the absolute worst things in the world. We could talk about that later. But what drives me a little crazy about that is we don't ask people, what is your baseline? Because if a person was a hoarder when they were 40, they're going to be a hoarder when they're 80. Period. End of story. If their children did not get along with their mom when they were growing up, then they will not get along when she is older. End of story. So that's what we want to talk about when we talk about what's normal when it comes to pass. My grandmother made chocolate cake. It was to die for. You've never tasted anything like it in your life. And we'd say, Grandma, I need you to write that down. Yeah, yeah. Grandma, I need you to write that down. You don't want to say, because we want to have it when you're gone. I don't want to say that, right? But one day she couldn't make it anymore. And of course, it didn't happen in a day, right? But the recipe that she had made forever, she could no longer put together. That's a sign, right? When you go to the grocery store and you can't get back, the grocery store you've always been to, then we have an issue. Now, again, a lot of dementia is exclusion, so we want to rule everything else out. Do you know what my grandmother's problem was? A potassium imbalance. Wasn't Alzheimer's at all. People think I'm a miracle worker. Used to work at a retirement community, independent living director, and people come to me and say, I'm pretty sure that within the week my mom has gotten Alzheimer's disease. No, it's a very gradual process. And any of you who've lived with it know that you can look back over time and say, oh, I see the signs way back when, right? So how am I a miracle worker? I say, first thing you want to do is test for a urinary tract infection. Elders get it a lot, elder women get it a lot, and it mimics the signs of dementia. So again, it's not a cure-all, and some of you all are going to have to live with family members who have dementia, but we want to rule everything else out first to make sure that that's what's happening. Because again, I am a professional in the field, and we were looking at memory care units for my grandmother. I know better. But again, you think to yourself, that's what's happening there. But you probably don't, If you think it happened today and you're worried about yourself, I want to say, you know, are you stressed? Are you depressed? Depression mimics dementia a lot of times. You know, are there other physiological things that we can rule out before we go down that path? And it is the plus of the blood test, right? But again, I just told you that the blood test is only going to test for Alzheimer's disease, and there's other forms of dementia. My mother, in the end, had hydrocephalus, which is a very treatable disease other than she had lots of other things going, but it mimics dementia. Lots of the same things going. This is probably the most tragic of all the situations, in my opinion, and that's what we call early onset Alzheimer's disease. We have now a documented case of a person having dementia, Alzheimer's, in their late 30s. There are many cases in early 50s. There are significant cases in the 40s. So when we talk about it being an elder disease, it's important, I think, it's unfortunate, but it is the case that we get better funding when we talk about early onset. Because again, and I think part of this is always a little bit personal, right? Because I'm like I said, I'm 58 years old, and I saw at the walk for Alzheimer's here in Tulsa a woman who was 58 years old who got up at the walk and could not give her speech. Her sister had to come and help her. She has significant to middle stage Alzheimer's disease. And I looked out in the audience and saw her sons sitting there who are my children's age. And you think about the impact of that. Not that it's not fair for elders either, but people ask me all the time about the genetic link to dementia. And the answer to that is the genetic link isn't real strong in elders, and I'll get back to that. But the genetic link is very strong in early onset. So if you have someone who has the disease in their 50s, then it is highly likely that you have, I'm going to say the propensity, not the absoluteness of developing it. And you say, well, what's the deal? And I'm like, I don't know. We don't know yet what it is. But again, think back to that breast cancer gene that I talked about. And you all know, if you've encountered that or read about it or know about it, it makes it a more likely situation. And so a lot of times, you know, people make decisions based on that breast cancer gene to prevent things from happening. And you say, well, what about dementia? What are we going to do with that? And my answer is there are some things, but not as dramatic a thing that could perhaps make the likelihood zero as there is with the breast cancer gene. So it's huge in getting us toward the research. That's the thing that is really important right now, is that we continue to do research so that we can work toward the cure. Very big. And again, I'm not going to show you the video. By the way, if you are like, please, I want to see this. This is on the web. I can get you to the address. So if you really want to hear Dr. Snyder talk, then you can hear that. But I prefer to have a conversation with you all and talk about the issues at hand than to go that way. So umbrella term, dementia. It's the idea that we're talking about all different kinds of dementia along the way. Most common is Alzheimer's. And again, not a normal part of the process, not a normal part of aging. Some of you have probably seen the NUN study, NUN as in N-U-N study. 60 Minutes did quite a coverage of it. You know, I always tell my students what's really cool about nuns is that we know where to find them. You know? It's true. And when I study college students, you know, it's a disaster, right? I mean, I may not even have them for an entire semester, much less try and find them 10 years later. That's worthless, right? But, and there are some tracks of heredity in some of the nuns that have been studied. But what's weird and amazing and promising is there are people with amyloid proteins in their brain to the point where you would think they are no longer able to cope, and they don't have any signs of Alzheimer's. So, and you know, again, we think of all the parts of the body that we know the least about, it's the brain. So we're going to get there, I think, eventually. But we aren't there now to say, okay, you know, the amyloid protein situation is it. It is part of the picture, but not the whole picture. I have to tell you, I went to D.C. to advocate. There's a man who lives in Oklahoma City whose wife got early onset, who is the speaker, international speaker. He lives in Oklahoma City to talk about what it was like for him to caretake for his wife and all the things that happened in his family. And it's really cool because he's not only inspirational, but he's also positive. Because, you know, some of this you think, we have trouble sometimes getting people to come hear about it because it's like, oh, can we just pretend like it isn't happening, you know? Isn't that better? But anyway, Herb is the guy. And he and I were in Washington with a man named Ron who was in early stage, but pretty good early stage dementia. And we're all done with the Capitol, and we get ready to go to lunch. And Herb and I want to go to this place we've heard of, and Ron knows about it too. And we're trying to figure it out, and we're wandering about and can't figure it out. And Ron's like, it's two blocks up and three blocks over. And, you know, we're like, okay, let's go. Guess what? Two blocks up, three blocks over. So when you say, what does Alzheimer's look like? What is the progression? The number one thing family members ask me, how much time do I have left? What's it going to look like? How's it going to be? And the answer is, I have absolutely no idea. Because every person with Alzheimer's disease progresses differently. So when you get a prognosis of a particular type of cancer, there's a pretty good status as to, you know, here's what probably the progression's going to be. And you have a window of time that you can talk about, or a procedure and a probable way to diagnose and treat that situation. But it isn't that way. And I think for me, and this is a psychologist, not a psychiatrist, right? No medical background in me. But for me, I think a lot of it has to be linked to our brain's plasticity, right? Because you all know people who've had pretty significant strokes who have recovered. And again, thank God for the medications now that stop all that from happening if you get it fast enough in the right places. But, you know, we know damage to a child's brain is very forgiving. Their plasticity is awesome. They can recover very well. But I have a feeling, and then again, this is worth what, well, I was going to say worth what you paid for it, but you gave us money, so I don't know what to say. But, you know, that plasticity has something to do with it. Let me get back to age for a minute, because you would legitimately ask the question, you know, what is it about age then that is the correlate? And one of the things is you have a healthy family. So if you have a family member who got Alzheimer's disease in the 80s or late 70s or 90s, the chances are it's a very healthy family. You haven't died of cancer. You haven't died of heart disease. You don't have other issues. And so as a result, the older we go, the more likely we are to have dementia. It's not a given, but you see the difference between saying it's an elder disease and saying this, that, or the other? And just because we're there, I'll tell you the other somewhat unfortunate part of this stat is we see it over and over and over again when we work with families with Alzheimer's. One out of three caregivers for an Alzheimer's patient will pass before the person living with the disease. That's how impactful caring for a person with dementia is. And I will tell you, I don't work for a facility. I have no reason to encourage you. But I will tell you that I have sat down with residents when I worked in one and said, sir, you are going to pass before her if you don't do something about your own health. And then who will take care of her? Because a lot of times family members want to be the one, right? And Herb says it best when he finally put his wife in a memory care unit, which I'm not saying you have to do, but for him it was the right decision. He said, I got to be a spouse again. And that's huge, right? To be able to love and know and care for a person in a way that isn't debilitatingly hard. So I always encourage people, all of us in this room, I want you to think about this statement before you make it to your children. Don't ever, ever, ever put me in a facility. Don't make that statement. Because you may, in the end, be saving your person's life by allowing them to be cared for in that capacity. Not always. And you know, there's great options now that allow people to stay at home a huge amount longer than ever before, right? You know, back in when I first started in the field of gerontology 30 years ago, we didn't have a lot of home health or or ways that people could come into the home and help. We didn't have adult daycare centers for the most part. So we have a lot of options now we didn't have because the world is changing. The way we care for people is changing too. So that's important. I'll get to the medications a little later, but those of you who know about it or investigated or have heard about it on the news will know that, for example, Leqembi is one we talk a lot about right now. It's the one that eliminates or at least decreases amyloid protein. What's cool about those people who are on that medication now is it's a holistic approach. So you can't just go get the prescription from the doctor. There's PET scans involved, there's progress involved, there's all kinds of monitoring involved. And again, that's good for the patient, but it's really good for the research because it's really going to tell us a lot about what's happening out there in the world of the brain, which is very helpful. Dr. Alzheimer's is the one. One of my pet peeves, we're getting better about this, but I used to have kids in my college classes who'd say, Alzheimer's, right? Have you heard people say that? Alzheimer's, very German. My kid's last name is Gruppmeier, so I know enough German to be dangerous. And again, we're going to see shrinking of the brain, and we're going to see differences in all kinds of things. But again, all very different. And usually your short-term memory is much more impacted early on than your long-term. I have a very close friend who's in the midst of this with her husband. And she said she went to go visit the other day. Her name is Pam. And she went to go visit the other day, and her husband asked her if she would go get Pam. She said, I don't know what to do with that. Well, there's lots of strategies, but to argue with a person with dementia is like arguing with a brick wall, and that's their reality. That is their reality. So you got to accept that he doesn't know where Pam is. And she said, I don't know what to do. And of course, it's just awful. There's nothing worse than not having your family member recognize you. But she said, why is that happening? And I said, don't you remember when you first got married and how wonderful it was and how romantic it was and how much you guys loved each other? And it's not that you didn't in your later marriage years, right? But he may be back in that point. He may be back in that point of your marriage. And so he's looking for, you have to have a sense of humor about this or you will die. So the answer is he wants young Pam back, He wants hot Pam back, right? And so as a result, that's where he is in his head. And we can argue all day about it, or we can say, she isn't here right now, but I am. Do you want to do a puzzle? Do you want to go to lunch? The hardest part for me was my sister passed away at the age of 52 with colon cancer. And my mother wanted to see her. Every time I'd go, she'd say, where's Beth? What's Beth up to? What's Beth doing? My sister, I have to tell you because I'm proud. She was the first female president at Cornell University. You can look her up if you want to, just for fun. But she constantly traveled. She was constantly involved. Anytime I needed her, she was someplace like India, And so when mom asked for her, my mom's calm, I'd say, she is so far away again. Can you believe it? But I guarantee you, next time I see her, she's going to ask me about you. And I guarantee you, she can't wait for you to see where she's traveling to. Did I lie? No, I didn't even lie. Right? And again, the thing that kills me is when people who have family members who are living with any form of dementia who say, Mom, she's gone, right? I mean, do we want to grieve every time I go? Do I want her to grieve every time I go? Of course not. So we have to deal with people in their reality, meet them in their reality. I had a group, amazing trial lawyer. He was in Las Vegas. Came to live at the facility where I worked, and he was a handsome man. Had two ladies that followed him around everywhere. The numbers are bad for men and women in facilities, right? I mean, it is about 2-1. So it's kind of cool that he had two of them, right? And they went everywhere with him. And they lived in independent living. They can live in independent living if they can manage it. And my restaurant staff, they'd say, they eat lunch and they come back an hour later. They want lunch again. you know? And I said, you got to say, the kitchen's closed. We served our last people, you know? Come back in 4 hours. Appreciate you coming. Again, I'm not going to argue. There's no point in it. Absolutely no point in it. And all I'm doing is creating a horrible experience for them and a horrible experience for me. We have a term for it. It's called therapeutic lying. Now, you were taught you never lie to your parents, right? And we certainly don't want to teach our children we lie, right? But are you? Because you're meeting that person in their reality. Their reality. One more story, because I love these. I think this is the thing that families have the most struggle with. A spouse, a woman, came to me. She said, I wake up every morning, my husband thinks we're in Paris. They traveled all the time. She said, I spend all day saying, no, look, out there, it's Oklahoma City. Look, there's the north, you know, there's the Pennsylvania. We're in Oklahoma City. I said, move to Paris. Move to Paris. Who doesn't want to live in Paris? How cool is that? We had a men's group, a coffee group. She could drop him off. And they've all been to Paris pretty much. So they could talk about the Eiffel Tower or what airplane they flew in World War II or whatever it was. You know, you don't need to spend all your day trying to convince people of what our reality is. Back in the day, when I first started in this program, we did reality therapy. We'd put every label on everything. We'd say, Marge, it's Monday. Okay, you got it, Marge? Marge, it's Monday. Come on, Marge, Monday. And then I'd leave. I'd come back in. Hey, what day of the week is it, Marge? She'd be like, who cares is the right answer. I mean, I don't work an 8-to-5 job anymore. I don't know what day of the week it is half the time, right? I have to look at a calendar. So if there's one thing you could leave here with in the realm of it, and again, I want to make sure I have time for questions, is to suspend the reality of where you are and meet that person in their reality. It's so important. Greatest known age factor is age. No question about it. And again, genetics, not so big when it comes to late onset, late age Alzheimer's disease. It's not the biggest factor. Now, again, you say, well, okay, well, then tell me what is, and I told you why age is a big factor. But there's also lifestyle things we're seeing that are different. And if I could give you one Fountain of Youth tidbit from that other presentation, it's movement. I used to travel with a neurologist. He did the physical medical stuff, and I did the psychological caregiving type stuff. And he would tell you the fountain of youth, regardless of dementia, take dementia off the table, the fountain of youth for you is movement. And we're terrible at it, right? I go to a Pilates class pretty much 5 days a week if I'm in town. And I watch people circling the parking lot for the closest space to the Pilates gym. Right? And you watch me, unless like today, I really didn't want to be in pouring rain, you know, but other than that, I will park as far away as I can that is safe. Because, you know, I was just over in Europe. I always think about Holland, you know, where there's more bicycles than there are people. Y'all know that, right? And they walk everywhere. If they're not bicycling, they're walking. And so they really don't have the obesity problems that we have because they are moving. And the other little tidbit, because I love them, is stretch your brain in new and different ways. Now, if you've always done a crossword puzzle, that doesn't work. New and different ways. So, like, I tried to learn Spanish online. I say tried because it really didn't. I just can't do it. But it honestly doesn't matter that I'm not bilingual now. What matters is I stretched my brain, you know, new and different ways. I don't care what you think about W. Bush. But have you noticed he is an artist now? And talk about a great idea, right? Kind of like Grandma Moses, all those people who have learned a new skill late in life. And you want to combine the two. Take up dancing, right? Good for both. A little more, and then I want to have a discussion. Disparate impact on minorities, for sure. We see much more impact on individuals who identify as minorities than those who do not. Again, yeah. I would love for you to hear these people if you're interested on the way. Then again, we talk about the stages, and why this is important now is because of things like Lokimbi. And maybe I'll stop there and let you all ask questions, see what happens. But used to be, I would say this. If a diagnosis is important to you, if a diagnosis is important to you, go get one. But if it isn't, then let's deal with the strategies, the abilities. But the number one thing, which is a whole nother presentation, that everybody in this room, including me, needs to work on is our paperwork. Do you have a will or a trust or whatever it is that's important to you? And I'm not selling that stuff to you. Do you have a medical power of attorney? Do you have a durable power of attorney? Do you have all the things in place so that if anything happens to you, that you are ready? Because I guarantee you, again, if what's amusing to me as a single woman in the dating world, I care much more about how off target are your children than I do a lot of things I used to care about, right? Because who's going to take care of you when you need help? And if you have a dysfunctional family or even a functional family that doesn't do well with stress, who's going to be making those decisions? And I've seen it, times where a couple doesn't get married. Again, I worked in a very high-end retirement community, very expensive, and he died. They weren't married. Children got everything. She has to move. It's not what he wanted, but it's what happened because he wasn't ready. So those are the kind of things that you want to be ready for in the likelihood. And again, I'm not selling you a trust. I always cringe a little because there's people out there that are doing the wrong thing with that. Or it's very expensive, even if it's the right thing. But those are the things you want to get your life in order. And again, I used to say that. I used to say, don't hurry with your diagnosis. Hurry with your paperwork. But that's the wrong time to be making those decisions, right? But in the end now, my answer is, you probably need to go get a diagnosis as fast as you can get on a wait list to get one. Because there are drugs now that may give you up to, right now, 18 months a pretty high-quality life at mid-level, mild-level cognitive impairment. That's huge. Now, what I can't get anybody to do, and someday I'm going to find somebody who's actually doing the Lokimbi thing who can do the math for me, is how much did the 18 months cost you? And, of course, your answer is priceless. Except that right now, you're going to need to make sure you have enough money to care for that person in the manner in which they'll need in the late stages. So be careful with all that. And again, that's such an ethical dilemma, right? As to, you know, what would I spend for 18 months versus what am I going to have for... Ron, I told you about, is still living. So he's been in the disease for 10 years. So those are the kind of things we want to plan for and make sure that we're making great decisions. The cool thing about this is there are some really wonderful ways to celebrate if you are a family living with the disease, or if you want to celebrate the fact that you aren't a family living with the disease. And one of those is what you all have already done as an institution. We very much appreciate the contribution because, in my opinion, she told you, there's two groups I'm really involved with. One is Rotary, by the way, cured polio. If you don't know, that's the case. Rotary is the reason we no longer have polio in the world. And my answer to that is when we get an immunization for Alzheimer's, I want Rotary to run the gambit, right? And the other is the Alzheimer's Association. If you go look at them on the charity rating sites, they use their money to help the people who need it. Not huge administrations, not lots of money for big CEOs. Your money goes to what you want it to go to. So I appreciate very much your doing that. I'd love to open the floor for questions because that's the most important part. And I think I have 5 minutes. Oh, good. Yeah, you're the tech guy, huh? My son is Robert. My dad was Robert. So I used to talk all the time about the Roberts. Questions, comments? Yeah.
It's
working.
The new medicine. So I was at my doctor's, and she said, while it is supposedly preventative or whatever, that it's not tested enough to just say, oh, well, I'll take that, and then I won't have to worry about it. You really have to be in the early stages because of the side effects?
It's not preventative.
Well,
and it's very dangerous.
Yeah, the side effects, I guess, is what I wanted you to
talk about. Yeah, the side effects are big. And again, you think, well, you know, your point is so amazingly wonderful because it's not something you go, well, I don't want it, so I'll go get it. Yeah, you really need, well, and again, I would be shocked if you could get it in a manner other than the fact that you're in beginning stages of Alzheimer's disease, not even dementia, but Alzheimer's disease. And I love that your doctor's educated like that to say that because, again, I mean, wouldn't we all like the preventative drug, right? I mean, I don't know. I guess some people don't like immunizations, but my point is if there was one, I'm getting it, you know? But we are so not there. We are not there. So she's exactly right. Yeah, great point. Yeah.
You mentioned...
Is there a green light on it?
Project out.
So you mentioned that there is a correlation between UTIs and Alzheimer's?
No, I'm so glad you clarified. There is not a correlation between UTIs and dementia. The point is UTIs mimic the symptoms of dementia. And so thank you if that was unclear. You know, I talk about this stuff all the time, and so I love that you cleared that up.
I know people are talking a lot about the gut brain now and its correlation to mental illnesses. Is there any correlation to the gut brain, diet, nutrition, and digestion to Alzheimer's?
So one of the things I always tell my students is, what I would love for you to leave the semester with is less knowledge than you walked in with. They're like, okay, well, I'm just going to go home. My biggest problem with, I mean, I love your question, but global things. Like you're going to hear, I gave a presentation to a large group and the guy said, there's a place in Kansas that you go and you eat nutritionally well and they cure you of Alzheimer's disease. Now, part of me wants to go strangle somebody, not him, but whoever it is. So the good science answer to your question is there, you know, anytime we talk about stuff we don't know a cause for, there's so many correlates, right? And it could be that I'm a vegan, well, I'm not, but if I were a vegan, it could be that I'm also really physically fit, right? They tend to kind of go together. And so as a result, it's really hard to isolate variables and say, you know, stop eating this, start eating this. Have you ever noticed when you just watch the nutritional stuff, they'll say, eat margarine, eat butter, wait a minute, we don't know. And that's what my answer is on almost all of what you're talking about, except, and I can't believe I was on television talking about this not too long ago, constipation. There seems to be a really great link between constipation and the propensity toward dementia. Now, again, is it because you're constipated? I can't even believe I have to talk about constipation. Or is it because lots of people who have regular dietary habits and great eliminating habits, can I say it that way? Probably have other great habits too. So is it constipation, the act of constipation? I can't even say it without doing this. Or is it something else? So what would I eliminate from my diet based on all the stuff I know? And I read about this stuff all the time. I would be healthy. You all know about the blue zones, the regions of the world where people live the longest. They tend to know their farmer, know their food. They do tend to live in Mediterranean on ocean levels. Now, again, fish is getting dangerous because of nitrates these days, right? But that kind of stuff. So I don't know if salmon in Oklahoma is the way. I don't know. But there isn't an absolute to your answer. But you have to think that people who have good gut health are probably good, healthy people otherwise too, right? For example, a great correlate between hearing loss and dementia. But again, I'm going to argue to you, and by the way, I need hearing aids and I can't go do it. I just can't go do it. What is that? You know, it's like I've had glasses my whole life. I'm not embarrassed. But I should, because hearing loss is correlated with dementia, except that, is it that I can't hear anymore, or is it that I become socially isolated because I can't hear anymore? Is it because I'm struggling to watch the TV now because I can't hear it anymore? So as a result, it's not the actual loss of hearing that's the problem. It's all the behaviors that go along with hearing loss that's the problem. So I didn't answer your question at all, because I don't have the answer to your question. And I think anybody who acts like they do is wrong. Yes?
I am a hospice nurse. Uh-huh. And I am a hospice nurse, and I have cared for many late stage mm-hmm. Alzheimer's. And it is that importance. You do meet them where they are at. Mm-hmm. Even within the Lewy body dementia, I've had several of those patients, wonderful lives, but when they're in those hallucinations, it is very real to them. Mm-hmm. And I had a gentleman, he was a World War II pilot. He was in the European field, and a lot of his hallucinations was that he was back in war.
Yeah.
And there's usually a component they are seeing that makes them register to what they're seeing at the moment. Like his property backed up to a field, and there would be like hay bales
yes.
out there, and he would see European tanks, and he thought he was back there. I didn't confirm that's what he was seeing. I'm just going, I'm sorry, Mr. Jones. I don't see that. I see hay barrels. I mean,
yeah,
at that point, it's hard.
My technique with that would be to say, okay, you're off your shift. It's time to go back to the barracks. I don't know my terms very well, but it's time to go back. Let's go to a safer place for now, and you can rest. And that's, again, I want to, emphasize safety, which you know what you're doing. I'm just saying for the rest of you. That's a good example of how I don't argue, because there's nothing worse than a person with Lewy bodies to argue. That increases agitation like this. And, you know, the other great drug that's out there that's coming is to decrease agitation, because I don't know if you know, but if you have an individual who, for example, has aggressive tendencies, it's very hard to house them anywhere. My facility wouldn't take you if you had, my past facility, by the way, wouldn't take you if you had any history of that, because it's very expensive and difficult to deal with individuals like that. So that drug is really great, too, because back in my early days, we would just tie you to a wheelchair. And that's hideous, too. But in a way, then you could get somebody to a facility. I don't want that at all, but I'm saying, you know, I had a couple who had already put the deposit down and were ready to move, and she tried to kill him one night. You're done. He asked me, he said, where do I go now? It's horrible. And there's not great answers for that. Because I don't know if you've been in a facility for the mentally ill elders, but it is not a place any of us want to be, and we've got to fix that too.
Where, or how do they diagnose Lewy body disease? I mean, you said about, you know, what's there in the brain, mm-hmm. but do they do biopsies or what?
It's PET scans more or less, or other kinds of scans that give you brain activity and where we're shrinking and where the action isn't happening anymore. You can tell I'm not a doctor, can't you, because I don't use the good terms. But those are the kind of things we're going to diagnose. And again, back in the day, I used to say, I don't even know that I want a Lewy body's diagnosis, because if I want to get somebody into a facility, that's more of a red flag than Alzheimer's. So I used to say, let's not get that on our form, you know, if we can help it. But again, now that we're in the era of treatment, I've kind of changed my look on that a little bit. I want to end, and I know I want to be respectful. Are we okay? This is your place. I'm fine with going. But
yes, thank you.
Uh-huh.
How common is dementia with Lewy bodies? My stepfather passed from that, and he was a Korean War veteran. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious, what's the percentage?
Yeah, again, chances are somebody was throwing terms around. Lewy bodies, a lot of people think Alzheimer's the big umbrella. Lewy bodies is the disease. And again, we're starting to where we're splitting hairs now when we didn't used to be. Because a lot of times we just say, oh, Alzheimer's. And again, it's a disease of exclusion. So we still can't say you have Lewy bodies. Here's the results. We can look at the brain scans. We can look at all kinds of things and determine that it's more likely to be Lewy bodies than straight out Alzheimer's. But again, in the end, it doesn't surprise me, especially in facilities. Y'all know you take this test, right? It's one of the big deals. We say, we're going to ask you to count backwards from from sevens, I absolutely think that's the stupidest thing we've ever done, because I can go 93 and now I'm done. I have no idea. And I don't care, right? Motivation's a big part of this. So, and my mother, who had treatable, diagnosable, absolute hydrocephalus, terrible dementia symptoms, went into the doctor, and they tell you, right, think of these things. Remember, Daisy, yellow dress, chapel. And I took her in. She was very unfunctioning. And I took her in, and the doctor gave her the list, and she goes, Daisy, red dress, chapel. I got in the car. I go, that was amazing. I can't believe you did that. How did you do that? It's like when you drive a car away, and it's broken, and you get to the dealership, and it's working fine, right? She said, I used a mnemonic device. I taught you those when you were growing up. Yes, you did, Mom. And thank you very much. So again, it's also cyclical, right? We talk about people who wander at night, and we talk about people, you know, again, strategies to go. If you've got to do something big during the day, like go to a doctor's appointment, we want to schedule it during your perfect time frame, because you probably have a preferred time frame that you're better than other times you are. And stress and depression and all the things that are going to mount up with that. I want to close on a positive, and I'm happy to stay and answer questions, but I want to be respectful of your worship time. We are moving to a great place when it comes to Alzheimer's disease. I don't know about my lifetime, but I feel like in my children's lifetime, we are going to have impactful things that will change how difficult it is to live with dementia. And you can hold me accountable for that. Because I think we are on the road to a much better place when it comes to this very debilitating disease. And I want to thank you for your contribution and your attention. And I'm just amazed by this place.